Welcome, everybody. We're very pleased to have Lorenzo Leone, who is a PhD candidate at UMass Boston, supervised by Alyosha Hama, and who has done some very interesting work on quantum chaos and complexity, magic, entanglement, quantum many-body systems, and beyond. And today we'll tell us about learning efficient decoders for quasi-chaotic quantum scramblers. Lorenzo.
Oh, thank you, David, for the introduction. Yeah, so I will talk about something about scrambling and quasi-chaos and learning these scramblers. And this work is made in collaboration with my supervisor, Alyosha Hama, that moved recently to the University of Naples, my PhD mate, Salvatore Oliviero, who works with me in every work, and our mentor and co-author, Seth Loy from the MIT. Unfortunately, I will talk about two works from our group that are not on the archive yet. Hopefully in 2 weeks they will be out. And yeah, we're rushing on that. So let me briefly give you an overview on what I'm talking about today. So I will talk about scrambling, and scrambling dynamics is when a localized quantum information, so imagine a localized quantum state, let's say psi A in a bigger system of qubits, gets I'd in non-local degrees of freedom by some unitary evolution. And then the big question here is, can we learn the scramble information? Is that this evolution is reversible? Naively, of course, the answer is yes, because quantum mechanics is unitary, so it always admits a backward evolution. But then, in practice, in quantum mechanics, non-reversibility arises when a learner is unaware about the backward unitary evolution. And then the best things that a learner can do is to build a mocking backward evolution that is able to do the job. And of course, when is this problem of learning, is always the question, how hard is for the learner learn this mocking backward evolution? So this is the overall picture, but I will specialize my discussion to this scrambling setup that has been first introduced by Adam and Preskill 15 years ago, and then kind of solved by Yoshida and Kitaev. So I will refer to this protocol as Aiden, Preskill, Yoshida, Kitaev protocol. And so I'm forced to give you three slides of introduction, of technical introduction. I'm sorry for that, but they will be necessary for the rest of the talk about the Clifford group and the Pauli group and what I mean mathematically by scrambling dynamics. And then I will turn to, of course, review the decoupling theorem and the Yoshida Kitaev protocol. And then in the rest of the talk, of course, I will tell you about the main result of the paper. And the surprising thing is that we will prove that very complex dynamics, and you will be aware about what I mean by complex dynamics, admit Clifford decoding. And for those of you who are already familiar with Clifford dynamics, this could sound a bit surprising, and I will show you why is this the case. Okay, so this is the boring slide. So the Clifford group is very famous in quantum information because it is filled out by those unitary evolution that can be simulated efficiently on a classical computer. So it's thought about being useless in some way, but it is not. So in order to define a Clifford group, we first need the Pauli group, which is built out by the all possible products of single qubit Pauli matrices, so X, Y, and Z. If you take all the possible product of these operators, you get a group which is closed under multiplication, and the cardinality of this group will be 2 to the 2n, where n throughout the talk will be the number of qubits, and d will denote the dimension of the Hilbert space of n qubits, so 2 to the n. Analogously, you can also build a local Pauli group by taking all the products of Pauli matrices just on a subspace of your Hilbert space, for example, A, and you will get this a group filled out this by this operator, so Pauli string on A, different from the identity, and the identity on B. Of course, the cardinality of this group will be analogous of that, so it's 2 to the 2 number of qubits of A that throughout the talk will be denoted as this cardinality of A, or analogously as dA. Okay, so now we can introduce finally the Clifford group. because it is filled out by those unitary operations that acting adjointly on polystrings return a polystring again. So it's very simple. And analogous definition can be the following. So it can be generated by all the possible product of these three unitary generators. So the C-naught, which is able to entangle qubits between them, the Hadamard gate that creates superposition on zero and ones in a computational basis, and this phase gate, because this puts this trivial phase I on the one bit. The products of these three operators forms a whole Clifford group, and you can ask a question of whether, how can I, from the Clifford group, build the full unitary group? So, and a theorem ensures that you can just add one Clifford gate to this set, so C-naught, Hadamard, and S-gate, to make it completely universal to quantum computation, which means that taking the products of this operator, you can generate every unitary operations within a desired accuracy that can be made smaller and smaller. And this non-Clifford gate, typically, it chooses to be the simplest one, so the T-gate, which instead of the I phase as the phase gate, has this e to the I pi over 4. Surprisingly, this is able to generate the whole unitary group. And since this T-gate, which would be a figure of merit in the talk, it is not a Clifford operations, it's a joint action on poly operation must not give a poly operations operator again, and indeed it's a superposition of poly operations. This can be thought exactly as the reason why the classical simulation of Clifford circuit is efficient, while if you throw a number t of non-Clifford gates, the simulation gets exponentially harder in t because you get a superposition, many, many superposition of poly operations. So you can think about the simulation of this kind of circuits to be efficient as long as the number of T-gates that you throw in a deep Clifford circuit, which can be simulated anyway, grows only logarithmic in the number of qubits. Okay, one more boring slide about scramblers. So I told you that scrambling means hide local information into no local degrees of freedom. But then you can mathematically define scrambling by looking at this out of time order correlation, which has kind of exotic correlators, which are, of course, expectation value of some operators in some state. And the state is chosen to be the maximum state, so the identity over the total dimension of the Hilbert space. And then if you take two local operators, for example, Pauli operators, say in D, local in A and D respectively, then you evolve one of them, for example, D, adjointly in the Heisenberg picture with U, and position them in this alternating fashion here. So you can think A not evolvent on time and D evolvent on time if U has this parameter that you call time, and then you get this 4-point OTOC, out of time order correlations. So from this, you can easily mathematically define a unitary to be scrambling if the value of this 4-point OTOC vanishes exponentially in the number of qubits. So for me, this is the definition of a scrambling unitary. So, and I argue that Clifford circuits are very, very good scramblers, and you can see this, or is not very mathematically rigorous, but let me say this. So you can decide that Clifford circuits are very good scrambler because you have computed the average of the 4-point OTOC with respect to the whole Clifford group, and you find that this average vanish exponentially in the number of qubits. Contrary, if you compute the average of higher order point OTOC, for example, the 8-point OTOC, which is built in the same fashion, you see, you need four operators instead of two, but you have always this alternating fashion on one evolved in time and the other one not evolved in time or by you, you realize that the average over the Clifford group, the 8-point OTOC, vanish as 1 to the d square, while the average over the full unitary group vanishes 1 over d to the fourth power, which apparently is a very dwarfish statement, I know, but I show you that it's meaningful, it's not meaningless, this apparently meaningless difference. Okay, so Clifford circuits are very good scrambler. Of course, if you throw some non-Clifford gates in very deep Clifford circuit, the circuit that you get is still a very good scrambler. And by throwing T gates into Clifford circuit, you allow the transition in the value of this day 8.0 TOC from 1 over d squared to 1 over d to the fourth power. So generically, we study this T-doped Clifford circuit, in which you imagine you have a very deep Clifford circuit, many, many gates, polluted with some non-Clifford gates somewhere. And you have these three regimes. The first one I call the classical and correspond to the region in which you throw a number of T-gates with just k logarithmic in a number of qubits. And I told you that this can be efficiently simulable classically. And you can realize that the value of the 8.0 TOC is just as the value of the Clifford group with just this polynomial overhead that I claim that is unimportant for now. If you keep adding non-Clifford gates in this Clifford circuit, then you eventually go behind the region of classical simulability. And I call this region quasi-chaotic, in which the number of T-gates is n divided by 2, n divided by 3, but scales with n. But although these circuits are not classically simulable anymore, they feature a value of the 8.2 TOC, which is not the universal value 1 over d to the fourth power, but is 1 over d to the third power. And this is meaningful, as I show you. Then, once you have that your T gates are approximately 2n, you eventually hit the value, universal value, and you have the complete transition towards universal value of this 8 point out of 10 order correlations. Okay, now that we have our preliminaries, we can talk about scrambling, and in particular, the decoupling theorem introduced by Yaden and Preskill 15 years ago. Okay, so imagine that you have two parties, Alice and Bob, they're always Alice and Bob, and that share an Appiah pair, and the Appiah pair is a maximally entangled state. Why is a maximally entangled state? Because if you just throw one of these subsystems, a lambda or lambda prime, you just get the maximally mixed state on the other subsystem, so no information. So they are perfectly correlated. So you have two parties, Alice and Bob, who decide to throw a part of the state in an input of a scrambler UT. T is not time here, but labels the number of T gates in a very deep Clifford circuit. Okay, so you have this picture, and this horizontal line represents APR pair, and this and time goes up, and C and D are is another partition of the N cube. It's A plus B equals C plus D. Okay, then once you have this set up and you have thrown a part of your Appiah pair into this scrambling dynamics, you can ask the question of whether if Bob, which is B prime here, look at these qubits together with some output subsystem of this scrambler here, for example, D, but they are completely symmetric, how much information Bob knows about Alice, so about R? In quantum information, you can answer such these kinds of questions by looking at mutual information between R and a joint system D, which is this, and B prime, which is Bob's qubit. And the mutual information is defined as this sum of phonon entropies, where this is the phonon entropy, and these are reduced density metrics of this pure states here over the subsystem R, DB, and RDB. But beside this mathematical fact, the really cool fact about this decoupling theorem is that as long as Bob look at a subsystem D, which contains slightly more many qubits than A, so the qubits that L is thrown in this input scrambler, then Bob knows everything about Alice, because the mutual information is almost maximal up to this error, which scales exponentially, is exponentially small in difference of qubits between D and A. So I want you for now to remember this fact about the decoupling theorem. Bob can look at these qubits at any subsystem D, and with the promise that Bob, this subsystem D is slightly more is slightly bigger than A. So since this mutual information is maximal, this means that there exists in principle a protocol that Bob can apply by just looking at the output subsystem D and its qubits B prime in order to recover all the information from Alice. The question is, what is this protocol? Fortunately, Yoshida and Kitai found this protocol, And so in particular, let me briefly describe the protocol. Always still 15 years ago has been discovered. So the task from Bob, what does it mean, recover all the information from Alice? It means that the task of Bob is to distill an Epier pair between the Alice qubits R and some subsystem R prime of his qubits. So of course, the first thing that Bob must do is to append some state of this auxiliary qubit R prime that will be this subsystem here. He wants to distill the Epier to. Okay, so he first append this Epier pair R A prime to just store some symmetry in this picture here, then apply some decoder V that for now I want to keep unknown, and I will show you what kind of decoder do unscramble such information. So he applies this decoder on the system B prime, which is his qubit, and this A prime, which is another system auxiliary qubit that forms this APR pair, and then measure this subsystem D in which he is looking from the output scrambler. And through some projective measurements, get this ugly state here. But the important thing here is that how Bob is aware about the fact to having distilled an Epier pair between R and R prime, it just computes the fidelity. The fidelity between this ugly state here, which corresponds to this kind of diagram, this is just a projective measurement into the Bell basis of DD prime, these two spaces. And so, of course, the fidelity is the overlap squared of these two states, which is a figure of merit for the success of this recovery protocol of Alice's information. So what Yoshida and Kitai have proved is that if this decoder V is taken to be the conjugate of the unitary evolution, and here the conjugate is just playing the role without going into mathematical details, but is playing the role of the inverse unitary evolution. So if the decoder plays the role of the inverse unitary evolution, then the fidelity is maximal. It's maximal up to this epsilon, which depends just on the ratio between A and D. So again, if D contains slightly more many qubits, Bob can recover all the information from Alice. So beautiful, but this Bob must be aware about the dynamics, the scrambling dynamics, UT. And my question, our work starts from here, and my question is, can Bob learn how to unscramble such information? And can Bob learn a mocking unscrambling of such information? Or U star or U dagger or the inverse is the only operator that achieves this task? So more precisely, so we allow Bob to query the unitary UT. What does it mean, query? Query means that Bob has the ability to apply this unitary somewhere and take measurements. But the only measurements that Bob can do are on the subsystem D of qubits. So these are our only requirements. So can Bob, by these two requirements, has scrambled information? And so at the end of the story in this protocol means distill the Epier pair between Alice's qubits and a system of qubits in his possession? The answer is yes. And if you have a scrambler doped with T gates, and the T gates are strictly less than the number of qubits, and Bob measured the system from a dimension which is strictly less than half of the subsystem of qubits n over 2, there exists a quantum algorithm that Bob can apply, which scales polynomially in the number of qubits, but exponentially in the number of T gates, that learn a Clifford operator. So V is a Clifford operator that has scrambled information with maximal fidelity, where epsilon is the same epsilon as before, but it's not important, with overwhelming probability, which scales 1 minus exponentially small term. So let me take a step back, and aware of that, let me look at this figure again. So the three kind of faces, let me call them faces. I know that it is inappropriate, but let me call them faces for the moment. The existence of these three faces now makes sense, because the first one We call it classical because we know how to simulate this kind of circuits in a polynomial time on classical machines. Indeed, these kind of circuits admit a cliff for decoding of information, and the algorithm that Bob applies costs just polynomial, as a polynomial cost in N. While for quasi-chaotic circuits, again, circuits polluted with a number N, almost N of T gates, so N over 2, N over 3, et cetera, there still exists a cliff for decoding, but the algorithm has an exponential cost in the number of qubits. While for chaotic circuit, there's nothing to do. They, in general, of course, they do not admit any cliff for decoding, and of course, the algorithm has no cost. Okay, now I want to just to try to convince you with fancy diagrams why this is the case. I need to take again a step back and look at the protocol. So imagine it now, there is always Alice that throws a part of her Epier pair and Bob who throws a part of his Epier pair in the input of this scrambler UT. So Bob, in order to decode such information, looking at only the subsystem D, he measures some expectation value of some operators. In particular, he measures some poly operations. But if the unitary UT is doped with a number T of non-Clifford gates, the adjoint action, as I showed you at the beginning, will be the adjoint action on this polystring will be not a polystring in general. So let's say that this unitary does not preserve the polygroup. So if PD is the local polygroup on D and DD squared is its dimension, I claim that for any subsystem D, there exists a group GD that I call GD of UT, filled out by those operations, by those poly operations, poly operators that are preserved by the adjoint action of this scrambler. So such that there, the adjoint action of the UT on PD is still a polystring. Let me make a trivial example. Let's pretend that this number of T is dropped to zero. So U0 is just a Clifford operations. GD of U0 is, of course, the full poly group on D. Okay, why I told you that this T doped Clifford circuit smoothly loses the fact that they are preserving the poly group? Because there is this theorem here that the cardinality of this group is at most exponentially suppressed in the number of qubits, of non-Clifford gates T. So the idea is that for low T gates, there's still a part of the output that Bob can measure, which contains some Cliffordized information. So in order to show you how Bob can use such Cliffordized information to retrieve the Alice's information, let me make this very simplified assumption. Our algorithm works in a completely general settings, but in order to draw this fancy diagram, I need this assumption. So imagine that there exists a unitary operations calligraphic T, which is Clifford, which maps the full group GD into a local polygroup P of E, where E is a subsystem of the bigger subsystem of qubits D. So we can say that GD is unitary, is Clifford unitary equivalent to some subsystem of qubit E. So what's the result? If Bob applies this diagonalizer Clifford operation on the subsystem D, the result is that the space gets split into two subspaces, F and E, such that their union is, of course, D. And if Bob measures expectation value of polystring on E, it cannot distinguish the joint action of UT and D from a Clifford operations. And so the question is, can Bob, looking just at E and B prime, since E just contain Clifford operations in some way, decode the whole information from Alice? And thanks to the power of the decoupling theorem, the answer is yes. As long as the qubits within E are slightly greater than the qubits in A. But then there is a caveat that I'm hiding here. I have an additional slide in order to explain that. Bob must forget about F, otherwise the decoupling theorem does not apply. So which are the three ingredients for this statement? The first one is that it is possible to move the Cliffordness, the non-Cliffordness away and read Clifford information. The caveat is that one needs to forget completely Clifford information, and it is possible by unitary evolution, which scrambled that information away and let Bob forgetting about that useless information. Then the decoupling theorem is of course necessary because it ensures us to that we can decode from a small subsystem as long as it contains just slightly more many qubits than the one of Alice. And the result is that these quantum scramblers containing up to empty gates can be efficiently, and when I say efficiently means Clifford, are Clifford reversible. Okay, let me wrap up. So for me, I was speaking about quantum irreversibility at the beginning. And for me, classical quantum irreversibility arises when you dope Clifford circuits with at least 20 gates. Where, because if you dope your Clifford circuit up to 20 gates, they are even Clifford reversible. So this, the existence of such an algorithm, such a protocol, show the existence of kind of three complexity classes. The first one, again, is classical because everything is easy there. Then the second is quasi-chaotic because both the value of the 8-pointed TSE is not the universal value. And this is an hint about the fact that this region differs from the completely chaotic one. Indeed, in that region, you can Clifford decode your information, although the algorithm is very expensive because it scales exponentially number of qubits. And then the third region, which there's nothing that you can do. Again, why is that possible? Because you can move the Clifford non-Cliffordness away, because at the end of the story, this non-Cliffordness is a kind of an entropy called the stabilizer entropy. And you are allowed to work in this magic free subspace. Indeed, we are starting looking at magic as being noise in pure Clifford and clean circuits. And I would like to thank you all for your kind attention and for the chance of talk at API again.
Okay, fantastic. Let's thank Lorenzo for a nice talk. And at this point, we have 10 minutes for questions about the presentation. Maybe I can get us started. I have a kind of just basic question. Maybe you could just comment very briefly on how you would compute the 8-point OTOC, and what is the technique used to compute that in the situation where you have, some linear number of T gates?
Oh, yeah. So the techniques, so we introduced such techniques, I think, 1 year ago. So the techniques relies on these unitary design techniques. So is that the question, right? How to compute this 8-point OTOC when you dope Clifford circuit with T gates? Okay, I got it. Okay, just to be sure that I don't talk for 5 minutes for no reason. So anyway, from the tool of unitary design, the unitary design are an ensemble of unitary that resembles the moments of the unitary group up to the K moment. They are called K unitary design. The Clifford group is a tree design and Tafford design, and this is the really reason why it cannot attain the 8 value of the 8-point OTOC. Okay, but if you allow your ensemble to be doped with some Clifford, with some non-Clifford gates, you can define the four-fold channel, which is a quantum map which resembles the average over these circuits, and you see the crossover between Clifford average and R average in these four channels from the Clifford one to the R one.
Thanks.
And I can give you the reference anyway.
Okay. Thanks. That's great. So I think Michael was the next to put up his hand.
Thanks for the nice talk. I just had a question about in the decoder you showed, there's a step where you have to post select onto EPR pairs. So is this necessary? And if or do you, can you avoid this post-selection? And if so, does your results also hold in that case?
So I'm afraid that I missed the first part of the question. Are you asking about the APR peer and how necessary are is
yeah,
to use
exactly.
Okay, so let me comment on that by first looking at, okay. Oh yeah, so so this is the fact that you are using here the peer-to-peer is completely useless, and this is just a simplified settings in which indeed you can use just a pure state on A, and this peer-to-peer just correspond to the average state that you are using in this protocol. So here you can allow Alice to throw just a quantum state or a quantum information, and that is a great question, because otherwise the protocols would have been not trivial, but just useless. But the protocol applies when Alice throw an actual quantum information, say A, and this is just a simplified settings in order to explain things with easier math. And the peer-to-peer correspond to the average state that Alice throws in this input of scrambler.
And in the decoder, you're like projecting onto an EPR pair.
Ah, okay.
Is that necessary as well?
Yeah, it's necessary. Yes. Yes. This is necessary. And you can, I always look at this in this way. It's too cartoonized. But then if you imagine that all the information goes in D, right, because of the decoupling theorem, then this following these lines, you know, you go from A to D, D again. And if this is exactly you start, it goes in A again, right? It's just, this is maybe too cartoonized, but maybe give you the idea what's going on.
Thanks.
Alex, I think you're next.
Yeah, so I think I just got a little lost. So in your decoding protocol, where you were applying this curly D to split into sort of the Clifford looking part and the non-Clifford part, where did the query access to you come from? Like this,
that
kind of looks
great,
like, or where, how did that come into this decoding protocol?
It's a great question. It's fundamental for the whole purpose to understand this, but it's also very simple to answer, because this group GD of U that you remember is filled by those poly operations of D that are preserved by the action of U, and preserved means that are sent again in poly strings, needs to be found. It's different from every operator. So that requires many, many query accesses. And then once you found that group, you can find this diagonalizer operation here.
Okay.
We can say that the diagonalizer is, so finding, querying the unitary is necessary for building the diagonalizer.
Yeah, okay, I see. And then a related question, which I should probably know this, but so this fact that when you dope with these T gates, you still preserve some subgroup of the polys, is that fact, I somehow didn't know that fact. So is that coming from some earlier work or where does
There has been a work and so the all of this doping T gates and stuff comes from, so there are much work on magic state resource theory and indeed on the fact that some part of the polygroup is preserved is can be looked as a measure of non-Cliffordness in a unitary operation. There's been a work of a couple of years ago and has been defined this unitary stabilizer nullity, which counts exactly how many poly operations gets not preserved by the action of a unit. So yeah, this relies on a previous work.
Okay. Do you happen to know whose work that is, just so I can look it up? Or I mean,
sorry, it's called unitary stabilizer nullity.
Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Tim, I think you're next.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the nice talk. So I had a question about this the second regime where if you dope T gates of order n, then it's not classically simulable, and the decoding is exponential in n. So do you know if it's always the case that if it's not classically simulable, then it's also not efficiently decodable? Like, do you know if they always go together, or is there an example of something that's hard to simulate classically but efficiently decodable in your settings, right?
Oh, okay. In my settings, yeah. Well, we looked at. Let me cheat for 1 second to answer your question. If someone gives me this unitary, these scramblers, and also give me the diagonalizer from some oracle, then you cannot simulate the unitary because the protocol is completely different, but you can efficiently decode. But if you don't know the diagonalizer in general, this will be exponentially hard to find. Of course, the protocol is exponentially hard. In the worst case scenario, you can also be very luck in your querying, and then you can get your answer in polynomial time. But in general, it's exponential.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did I answer your question or not?
Well, I mean, is it like is there a rigorous connection between classical simulability and decodability? Or okay,
as long as I'm aware, no.
Mm-hmm.
So we are still into it. So maybe we're missing something here.
Mm-hmm.
I will give a closer look to it. I'm not surprised if there's no direct connection to this. I would not be very surprised. And although I'm be very surprised if there are strictly relation to these two facts. I may be a bit surprised. I don't think there's any relation between these two facts. But who knows?
Mm. Okay, thanks.
Debbie.
Am I heard? Yeah, good. So I want to follow up on Michael's question on the post-selection.
Yes.
How do I think about what's the claim or the conclusion of the result if you have a post-selection part in the circuit? Does it mean that I can actually physically perform the unscrambling, or I actually cannot perform the unscrambling?
If you do not post-select, so you're asking, so for sure the post-selection is a bottleneck of this protocol, and I can comment on that. And then you're asking, can I, without post-selection, decode information, unscrambling information? Is that your question, right?
You seem to say that it is necessary. So my question is, since post-selection or project onto a state is not a physical operation,
okay.
What does the circuit mean in terms of whether I can unscramble using the circuit or not?
Well, okay.
Or is it a proof technique that allow me to arrive at some conclusion mathematically without having to physically perform this step?
Okay, so first of all, I do not agree that post-selection is a non-physical operation. Because of course it's non-physical operation because it's non-linear and blah, blah, blah. But you can measure, you get a defase state and you post-select on your outcome. And the fact that you're post-selection, you can say, okay, I get this state with very, very small probability, and you're right, but the probability is not very, very small. Indeed, it's just scale as the dimension of A, the Alice's qubits, which typically in these settings is order one. So in order one moves, you get this state by measuring in the Bell basis. So that's my question. And then we can comment, there exists a protocol and a particular unitary in which you can always get a good state to unscrambling, but this is another question and has been answered by Yoshida. And if your circuit is Clifford, then you can always get a good state to unscrambling in this kind of protocol. And by the way, I think that, but I haven't looked into it, but I think if you Clifford the code, also no Clifford gate in this algorithm here, you can get get the state, always a good state when you project when you measure in the Bell basis. But we haven't looked into it yet.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt the discussion, but at this point, we are at the end of the Q&A on the talk. And so let's thank Lorenzo again for really...